In your name we pray, amen. So speaking of prayer, it's kind of a little important to Christianity. I know, go figure. How many prayers do you think we have in the Bible? Just throw out numbers. 100? 200? Okay. Yeah. So we think 200? Well, what if I told you it was 650? 650 prayers. Now, I will grant you, the Psalms take up just little under a quarter of them, because, you know, it's 150. But that means that 75% plus, actually, more than 75% of the prayers we have are throughout the rest of the Bible. And here's the fun part. They're not uniform. We have prayers that are said differently and are in different ways and varying lengths. But there's also another thing. They're all not done uniformly. You don't have everyone going into the same posture to pray. We have David in 2 Samuel sitting. But we also have Daniel in his self-proclaimed book, Daniel. We have him on his knees three times a day. But then we also have Jesus standing, and you'll see later in this passage, we have him on his face. And let's not forget about Paul in all his uniqueness. We have his hands up in the air in 2 Timothy. It might be 1st. It's one of the Timothys. But that means that prayer isn't done the same, which is weird because I was taught hands together, bow your head, close your eyes, and you sit or stand there while the prayer is said. Or if the pastor is being adventurous, you do the repeat after me. So I want to turn the floor now to you guys. What are ways that you guys have prayed? Whether that be a specific formula you follow, a specific time, a way that you physically are when you pray. I'd love to hear what you guys do. While you're sleeping? All right, that's fair. Anyone else? Okay, when you're driving? At home? Always?
I'm praying in the car when people cut me off.
Oh, yeah. So, I'm not trying to prayer shame anyone. This isn't going to be a sermon about, oh, you're all praying wrong. You should be praying differently. These are all valid ways to pray. One way that I learned how to pray was the ACTS formula, which is an acronym which stands for Adoration, Confession, Thanksgiving, and Supplementation. It's a real simple formula. You begin by praising God for who he is and what he does. Then you confess your sins, which could be an hour, could be, I'm sorry for my sins. Then you give thanksgiving for everything that you have. And then after that, you do supplementation, which is the thing we always do, ask God for stuff. Which is interesting because you'll see in today's prayer, that's exactly what Jesus does. He asks for something, but he doesn't do it in a final way. He doesn't go, God, please let this be cheap, when he goes off to the supermarket to buy bread. What he does is instead ask God for something if it's within his own will. If you will turn to verse 32. Ooh, as I'm not ready. Okay. Verse 32. They went to a place called Gethsemane, and Jesus said to the disciples, "Sit here while I pray." He took Peter, James, and John along with him, and he began to be deeply distressed and troubled. "My soul is overwhelmed with sorrow to the point of death," he said to them. "Stay here and keep watch." I find it kind of funny that he says to the point of death. Because if you remember last week, we had the Last Supper, which means we're in the final 24 hours of Jesus' life. And he says to the point of death. If you've ever read the Hebrew, you find out that the whole thing is full of puns. It's really funny. But he goes to the point of death. And I have to think that this had to be a hard time for Jesus. Because he knows who's betraying him, what's going to happen, how he's going to die, when he's being betrayed, and he's going to go along with all of it. But note that even while he does go to Gethsemane to pray, he brings three friends with him. Peter, James, and John. Which I have to say are probably the loudest disciples to take to pray if you're trying to have peaceful meditation. You have Peter, or Petros, the rock that the church will be built on, who I swear his skull is as thick as a rock, as nothing goes in it. And then you have the sons of thunder, James and John, who are constantly fighting about who is better. And note that we don't hear anything from them in this whole entire passage. The three loudest disciples are quiet. I say that's either a really funny joke, or that's getting to a point. So let's find out what Jesus is praying about. Verse 35. Going a little further, he fell to the ground and prayed that, if possible, the hour might pass from him. Abba, Father, he said, everything is possible for you. Take this cup, yet not what I will, but what you will. For a whole entire hour, Jesus prays. We could have a prayer that could probably span pages. And instead, we have three measly sentences. He begins with Abba, which is Aramaic, but also, if you pronounce it wrong, it's Abba, and it's a superstar band from Sweden, if I remember right. Yeah. But besides that, it's Arabic for father. No, Jesus isn't saying male parental figure, send me help. What he's instead saying is Abba, which is something that kids would call their dad. I know for me, I would use the term dad, but others would use daddy, papa, pops, pa. Whatever pet name you would use, that's what Jesus is using right here. He's going, Dad, help me. But note that he doesn't say, that's it. Help me alleviate this cup. What he instead says is, if it is in your will to do that, please do. Otherwise, let it be. And I gotta say, that's a level of trust and confidence I don't think I've ever prayed. I've never gone, if it is your will, completely reject everything I say. But that's what Jesus does. He straight up goes, do what you think is right and ignore what I say if it doesn't flow with it. So we have Jesus praying for an hour, but know that the disciples don't say anything. What could be so important that the disciples aren't noted? Are they off praying for themselves? Are they searching the perimeter? What are they doing that is so important? Verse 35. Oh, excuse me, 37. Then he returned to his disciples and found them sleeping. Simon, he said to Peter, are you asleep? Could you not keep watch for 1 hour? Watch and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak. Once more he went away and prayed the same thing. When he came back, he found them sleeping. Because their eyes were heavy, they did not know what to say to him. So Jesus prays the same prayer three times, an hour each. Now, by show of hands, how many of you have prayed for 3 hours straight? Because I can't. I don't even think I've prayed for a full hour straight. But again, he does this. And note that he rebukes the disciples, but he doesn't rebuke them for a long time. We've had times where Jesus is real stern in his rebuking, but instead, he's a little more lenient in my eyes, I'll admit. He goes, the spirit is willing, but the weak is flesh. The flesh is weak. So he knows that the disciples want to do this, yet they still fall asleep. You have this beautiful prayer that Jesus is praying, and yet the disciples are asleep. It's a bit poetic, I think, won't you? But I think we are just like the disciples. We are willing, but our flesh fails. The disciples have been warned for 3 years that Jesus is gonna die. He is in Jerusalem. This is the end game. He even straight up told them, I'm gonna die. And of course, the disciples, like always, put on those blinders and can't see what's going on. Their whole dashboard is lit up with every light, and they go, oh, it's fine. I still have 30 miles in my tank. And I think sometimes we're just like that. We have our blinders on, and we think, oh, just 30 more miles to go, even though our dashboards are telling us you're doing everything wrong. We have that beautiful thought in our heads that, oh, I don't need God. I can do this on my own. I have the ability to do anything that I need to, because I have two hands, I have two feet, I have a brain, I have a mouth. I can do whatever I need to, talk my way out of whatever, build whatever I need. But we can't. We physically cannot. There are things that are out of our power, and most of that comes down to we don't pray. We don't pray enough. I'm not saying that you don't pray at all, but we should go to God more. He tells us to go to him whenever we have a problem. And if you remember VBS, we're supposed to shine his light. One way to do that is to pray. When we're happy, pray to God. When we're sad, pray to God. When we're fighting, when we're angry, when we're hurt, when the world seems like it doesn't love us, or when the world does, when we're helping others and fulfilling that need to be Christian, when we are actively giving praises to other, all the time we should be praying and praising God, but we don't. And it gets hard to do that all the time. We have that want to, but our flesh is weak and we don't. So while the disciples are asleep and Jesus beautifully rebukes them, off in the distance comes this beautiful light. So let's go to verse 43. Oh, excuse me, 41. Returning a third time, he said to them, "Are you still sleeping and resting? Enough, the hour has come. Look, the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Arise, let us go. Here comes my betrayer." So before I go any farther, I want you to either have whatever note-taking thing you got, because I'm going to give you some notes. So Matthew 27, 1 through 10, and Acts 1, 18 through 19. I'm going to have you write that in now, and we'll flip to it soon. Matthew 27, 1 through 10, and Acts 1, 18 through 19. We're not going to talk about that yet, but next verses we will. So in this, we have Jesus rebuking them again, which I think is very, very on point. He rebukes them for sleeping, but that's not really what it is. See, the thing is that he just said, "My betrayer is coming." Now, if I were in the disciples' shoes, I would be freaking out. How does he know that his betrayer is coming? First off, he just told me one of the people is having dinner with him, and now they're coming. Okay, so is that one of the three of us? Peter, James, did you guys mess up? Or is it me? Did Jesus do this on his own? What's going on? What's happening? I'd be freaking out. Like I said, you have these lights just coming closer and closer. And it's not one little torch, it's a bunch of them. So I would be freaking out. And Jesus is calm. He rebukes them as if this is normal, tells them to get up. My betrayer is coming. So who is that betrayer? Is it Bartholomew? Is it Matthew? Is it Luke? Who is that betrayer? Now, verse 43. Just as he was speaking, Judas, one of the 12, appeared. With him was a crowd armed with swords and clubs, sent from the chief priests and the teachers of the law and the elders. Now the betrayer had arranged a signal with him. "The one I kiss is the man. Arrest him and lead him away under guard." Going at once to Jesus, Judas said, "Rabbi," and kissed him. The men seized Jesus and arrested him. So that beautiful verses I told you to mark, Matthew 27, 1 through 10, let's flip to that. As my Bible decides not to flip to it. There we go. Early in the morning, all the chief priests and elders to the people came to the decision to put Jesus to death. They bound him, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate, the governor. When Judas, who had betrayed him, saw that Jesus was condemned, he was seized with remorse and returned the 30 silver coins to the chief priests and elders. "I have sinned," he said, "for I have betrayed innocent blood." "What is that to us?" they replied. "That is your responsibility." So Judas threw the money into the temple and left. Then he went away and hanged himself. The chief priests picked up the coins and said, "It is against the law to put this into the treasury, since it is blood money." So they decided to use it. So they decided to use the money to buy Potter's Field as a burial place for foreigners. It is why it has been called the field of blood to this day. And then what is spoken by Jeremiah the prophet was fulfilled. They took the 30 silver coins, the price set on him by the people of Israel, and they used them to buy the potter's field, as the Lord commanded me. Note, I also said that we're going to flip to Acts 1. Acts 1, 18 through 19. With the reward he got for his wickedness, Judas bought a field. There he fell headlong, his body thrust open, and his innards spilled out. Everyone in Jerusalem heard about this, so they called the field in their language Akel Dama, that is, field of blood. Now, the reason why I had you flip to this is because I don't think Judas really understood what he was getting himself into. Note that the words he uses are, look, the betrayer, boys, get him. He doesn't go, look, the false king who's going to kill Caesar, get him. He says, Rabbi. It would be like me going up to a friend and saying, sup, Bean, how you been? Or going to my other friend and calling them by their last name. Hey, Saba, how you doing? He doesn't say, look, the traitor. He goes, friend, and then kisses him and betrays him. Which makes me think that Judas didn't understand the ramifications of his actions. We have in Matthew where he is filled with remorse and he gives up the money that he got. Which makes me wonder, what did Judas think was going to happen? Did he think Jesus was going to be pulled in for questions and then released? He go off to wherever he came from, get a wife, have a family, get a normal job, probably fishing, and that be the end of it? What did Judas think he was doing? Which has me wonder, if he did this for money, what was really everything happening for him? We have the arrest. We have Judas betraying. So what follows next? This would probably be the end of any other story, but the Bible doesn't give us that satisfaction. It tells us more. Verse 43. Oh, no, sorry, 47. Then one of those standing near drew his sword and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ear. That's Peter. Peter did it. He got the ear. It's Peter. And we know this from John 18:10. He straight out says, it was Simon Peter, pulled out his sword, cut off the ear. But something I want to add is actually Luke 22, verse 51. This is the only gospel we have where it says that Jesus healed the servant's ear. So it's not just this dude's bleeding for the rest of the time. He gets healed, even though Peter cuts him. Verse 48. Am I leading a rebellion, said Jesus, that you have come out with swords and clubs to cut me, to capture me? Every day I was with you, teaching in the temple courts, and you did not arrest me. But the scriptures must be fulfilled. Then everyone deserted him and fled away. And when the word needed him most, they vanished. For those of you Atla fans, I'm making a joke. But moreover, when Jesus needed the disciples, they left. They didn't stay there to defend him. They fled immediately as things got bad. And I feel like sometimes that's our faith. It is beautiful and kindling when there's no wind and a beautiful fire in front of us. And as soon as that wind comes that's a little too strong, all of a sudden the fire goes away. Which is why we need to go to God in prayer. It's beautiful. We have that direct line. It might as well be speed dial on one. We have God right there. But we don't always use it. So something I want you guys to do this week, I know I'm giving you homework, is think of how you normally pray and do something different. Let's say you do a morning devotion. Instead of praying at the end like you normally would, maybe you do it at the beginning. If you use the Acts formula, do a different formula or go off the cuff. If you pray at like 8 o'clock, instead pray at 7 or at 11. Do something different, and I would love to hear how that changes your life. So now, with that beautiful prayer and remembering that Jesus rebukes even the people who capture him, Let's talk about a naked man. Verse 51. A young man wearing nothing but a linen garment was following Jesus. When they seized him, he fled naked, leaving his garment behind. So there's four different theories for what this could be. The first is that this was Mark. Linen cloth was a bit more richly than a lot of people would have had. So there's a theory that this is Mark himself talking about his account in this story. We don't have it anywhere else, so it could be. Another thought is that this is a cynic. So a cynic was a follower of Diogenes who would wear a literal sheet, because in one of Diogenes' stories, there was a cynic who wore the sheet, so that was the way that they distinguished themselves. But more than that, cynics were anti-establishment, which if you've listened to a lot of Jesus' sermons, they're very anti-establishment. So the thought is that this was a young cynic who his sheet fell off when he ran away. The third is that this was someone who was a zealot, who had his weapons with him, who was ready to fight, but as soon as he saw that the odds were completely against him, he ran away. The idea that the linen cloth being his weapons, he might have left him there when he booked it. It doesn't fully mean naked as in completely unclothed. It could have been naked as unarmed. We don't know because context tells us only so much. But then the fourth thought is that this is allegorical. So this is basically saying what verse 50 said. Everyone fled. The thought is that this is the disciples who fled when they saw that things got bad. That they abandoned everything that they had done for the past 3 years and ran when things got hard. Now, I'm not saying that any of these aren't plausible. I mean, there could have been three different people in the garden at that time. I don't know. I wasn't there. But if it is allegorical, it's also very telling of what faith can be. When things get rough, we leave. So sorry, that was a really loud I. when times are tough and faith gets hard to have, we have to have that faith. We have to shine that light. Because when we shine that light, we shine what it means to be Christians. The world isn't always happy and go lucky. The world isn't always going our way. Sometimes it's rough. God doesn't promise us a smooth and easy life as Christians. He tells us we will be persecuted and martyred, which the disciples were, and to a certain extent, so are we. Not so bad that we're fed to lions, but sometimes the inner demons that we face might be just as bad. So while you do those different prayers this week, changing up how you normally pray, for those of you who don't pray daily, try doing that. I know for me, I will struggle to not ask God just when I need something, but to set up a daily regimen that I do. I pray daily, but I don't pray consistently. So with that, I'm going to ask you all to pray. Whether you have your hands up in the air or you are still sitting, pray with me.